That massive mudslide in Washington State is the more recent example of the need for resilience in the face of disaster. The National Institutes of Standards and Technology is launching the Disaster Resilience Initiative. It will help communities recover from the aftermath of natural disasters like the mudslide or Superstorm Sandy that struck New York and New Jersey in 2012. Here with more on the new initiative is Steve Kaufman, the leader of the Disaster Resilience Framework at NIST. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me.
All right. So what framework do communities operate under now, or do they just kind of make out the best they can?
Well, I think it's important to understand that our buildings and infrastructure lifelines were built to the standards and codes that were in force at the time of their design and construction. So in the United States, we have some very old systems, some newer buildings and infrastructure lifelines, and they perform differently. What we're trying to do with the Disaster Resilience Framework is get people to think about the needs of the institutions, the social institutions in the community, and how those requirements for the social institutions translate into requirements for the performance of the buildings and infrastructure lifelines that support them.
So explain that connection. What do you mean by the social institutions, and how can they affect building structure?
Sure. When I refer to social institutions, I'm thinking about individual citizens, government institutions, industry, and by industry, that's businesses that actually produce goods that are consumed not only locally but around the nation and around the world, and business, and those are retail outlets and service businesses that support the needs of the community. Those institutions need buildings, they need power, water, wastewater, communication systems, transportation in order to function. And so it's the needs of those social institutions that really drive the performance requirements that we have for buildings and infrastructure. And this is a change in our thinking from what we do now. We're now talking about how soon do those buildings and lifeline systems need to be able to perform their function in order for the community to recover.
So in other words, just to make an analogy, you wouldn't want the fire department itself to burn down when there's a big fire going on nearby that they are needed to respond to.
Right. Or in the immediate aftermath of a disaster, you want your hospitals to be able to perform their function for to serve the needs of the community for injuries and that sort of thing. So we're actually looking at the time to recovery, and can we begin to fold that thinking in ahead of time in our planning and allocation of resources so that buildings and lifelines perform the way we need them to when a disaster of an expected magnitude occurs.
So give us an example of how that might translate into, that kind of thinking would translate into the framework that you're developing.
Sure. So the framework is really intended to provide types of performance goals and ways that we would express them or ways that we would measure them. And we want to identify existing code standards and best practices that can be implemented now by communities to address resilience. We also want to identify the gaps that currently exist. So are there areas where standards and codes don't currently exist, or perhaps there's research that's needed to address a need? But we want to identify those gaps and be able to work with them. We also want to look at the regional differences or capture the regional differences in the way communities think about resilience. For example, on the West Coast, San Francisco and Oregon have done very extensive studies on what resilience means to them. They're fairly far ahead. New York and New Jersey certainly have been thinking about it in the wake of Superstorm Sandy. And so we want to capture the work that's being done, but also, you know, are there things that are missing that need to be addressed? So the communities have a framework for how to think about resilience in their own context. So it's not a one-size-fits-all, but it's a methodology for how they think about and approach resilience.
Let's look at Superstorm Sandy for a moment, because that really swept away a lot of houses and so forth. Is there evidence for how well the institutions that needed to stay functioning were able to survive that whole washout that came into the city?
I think what was interesting about Superstorm Sandy were the cascading effects of some of the disruptions. For example, some of the hospitals that were located close to the water were unable to function because water was allowed to enter the basements where not only the fuel tanks for the emergency generators were located, but fuel pumps, and those hospitals were unable to function. There were also disruptions because of loss of power and the ability to distribute fuel and other services. So there were major disruptions in the community or in the area around New York and New Jersey. And there were houses that were damaged on the coast, but there were a lot of engineered buildings that survived quite well, but were unable to perform their function because of other disruptions.
And what about the Joplin, Missouri tornadoes? I think there was a lot of lessons learned there. How does what happened there figure into what you're developing?
Well, it figures in a number of ways. I think one, again, is the ability of critical buildings to perform functions. In the case of the Joplin, Missouri tornado, there was a major medical center that was damaged. The building actually remained standing, but because of the extent of damage, not only to the building itself, but to the backup power system, it was unable to function. And so folding in the thinking of what the function is and how those systems need to perform is very important going forward. And it's a way to reduce the amount of damage that occurs and also reduce the demographic changes that may occur in the wake of a major disaster.
We're speaking with Steve Kaufman. He's lead for disaster resilience at the NIST Engineering Laboratory. And you mentioned a moment ago engineered buildings versus some other kinds of buildings. What does that mean?
Right. Engineered buildings are buildings that are designed. This is things like high-rise buildings and buildings that are actually designed by a structural engineer. A lot of houses and things like that, wood frame construction, is considered to be non-engineered. It's built to code, but there's not an engineering design that takes place for those buildings.
So engineered buildings then presumably stand up better than non-engineered buildings?
It depends.
Some of them look like they're made of tin and corrugated and fiberglass sometimes.
In some cases, yes. And in some older buildings, that's true. Modern buildings, though, even if they're considered non-engineered, can perform quite well in disaster events if they're constructed properly.
So when people adopt a framework, does that mean that they need to beef up the buildings they have or possibly relocate altogether? I mean, if you know a hospital is in a lowland, 2 miles from a floodplain, maybe that's not a great place to have a hospital.
That's correct. We're going to allow – what we're really trying to do is give people a way of thinking about resilience. The decisions that they make will be up to them. But you're right. It can be possible to locate buildings outside of hazard areas. Floodplains are a great example, and that's a way to improve resilience. There may be other steps that can be taken to improve resilience as well.
Now, you recently had a workshop about this whole topic at NIST, and was that part of a longer effort? And what are you planning to be the end result of the whole initiative on resiliency?
The workshop actually is being held on April 7th, so it hasn't occurred yet. But it is part of the process of informing the development of the disaster resilience framework. So we want to engage the stakeholder community in the development of the disaster resilience framework. And that will be the outcome. That will be delivered in 2015. And following the development of the disaster resilience framework, we want to establish a disaster resilience standards panel, again, composed of those same stakeholders. And that panel would be a self-governing entity that would further develop the framework and on a regular basis disseminate guidance in what we call a model resilience guideline that gives communities information they can use to enhance their resilience.
And I guess one of the questions people will probably have is how far outlandishly do we need to plan for resilience? Because if you asked Verizon on the 10th of September 2001, what if the world Trade Center's collapse down and crushed everything underneath and everything was wiped out underground in your communication center, they probably would have chuckled at the notion.
I think we've done a reasonably good job in this country of understanding the hazard exposure for most of the nation, and we do on a regular basis update that information. So it's really a matter of understanding what hazards are present in a particular area and deciding on the level of hazard that you need to prepare for and plan to be resilient against. So that's really an event that is likely to occur in a reasonable period of time. It's not necessarily the largest magnitude event that can occur, but the event that's likely to occur. And for most of the nation, we know what the hazards are. We already do design for those hazards, but we don't necessarily consider resuming function. And that's really the difference here in the thinking, is that we're moving beyond our current approaches to how quickly can we resume function following an event of the magnitude we expect.
So a continuity of operations plan as part of a resilience effort could maybe dictate how you operate even if the building itself does get wiped out. How can we keep going?
That can be part of it. That's exactly right. Another part of it may be that certain buildings can be allowed to not function for some period of time, or maybe you can do without a lifeline service in a particular part of a community for some length of time. In other places, those systems would need to be restored more quickly.
And by the way, how good is the federal government at all this kind of resilience planning?
Actually, the federal government, I think most agencies now are implementing resilience planning in their operations. And so, you know, we're taking this very seriously.
All right. Steve Kaufman is head of Disaster Resilience Framework at NIST's Engineering Laboratory. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Tom.